Okay, Melachim Aleph, Perek Chof, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. So we just finished discussing, well, we didn't actually finish, but we went through the second war that Ben-Hadad had with Bnei Yisrael, king of Aram. And in the second war, the chances of the Jewish people seemed very bleak. It says that they appeared like kishnei chasifei izim. There were so few that they just looked like two lines of goats. And yet, they still came out victorious. They still won the war, they won the battle, and they defeated Ben-Aram. Now, there's one thing I forgot to mention over here. It says that when the Navi came over to Ahav, in Pasuk Chofches, what did he tell him? Ve'ikash Yisha Elokim, ve'yoymer El Melech Yisrael, ve'yoymer Koyamar Hashem. Right, the Navi over here is telling Melech Aram, he's telling him that since, because Ben-Hadad boasted, and he said, oh, this king is only the king of the mountain, why did Ben-Hadad think that he was only the king of the mountain and not the king of the plain? Because, where did Hashem give the Torah? In Har Sinai. Figured, oh, you give the Torah in Har Sinai because that's where his power lies. So he's only the king, he's only has power when it comes to the mountains. When it comes to the plain, where it's flat, he's got no power over there. But if you notice, it says in this pasuk, Vayoymer twice. It says, Vayigash Yisha Elikim, Vayoymer, El Melech Yisrael, Vayoymer. It says it twice. Why does it say it twice? So the Mefarshim explain that the Navi is telling Ahav that after he captures Ben-Hadad, he's supposed to kill him. But we're going to see later on that Ahav didn't listen. What does this remind us of?
Shaul HaMelech,
exactly. Shaul HaMelech made the same mistake. He was supposed to kill out Amalek completely. But instead, he left the animals, the cattle and the goats, and he left Agag, the king of Amalek. And because of that, he was punished that the Malchus was taken away from him. We're going to see later on that Ahav was punished as well. But that's why it says Vayomer here in this pasuk. That's why it says Vayomer twice. Anyway, they managed to defeat the king of Aram, Ben-Hadad. They wiped them out. And they ran into the city because they were together with Yehuda. Yehuda was on the side of Aram, and so they figured, okay, let's run to Yehuda. He's gonna save us. But Hashem made an ace, and the wall fell down on them, killed them all, except for a few people with the king of Aram, Ben-Hadad. So let's see what happens now. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayomer Elav Avadav. The men of Hadad turn to him and they say, we hear that the king of the Jewish people, they're Malchi Chesed. Let's walk out and appear defeated, humiliated. He's going to feel so bad for us, so terrible for us, that he's going to let you live. And that's the plan. So what happens? Pasuk Lamed Beis. Vayachgiru sakim b'masneihem, v'chavolim b'rishim. They put on sackcloth and they put these ropes on their heads. Vayavoyu al melech Yisrael v'yoyimru. Avdecho Ben-Hadad Omar, Techi no nafshi. So they turn to him and they say, your slave, Avdecho Ben-Hadad, your slave Ben-Hadad, is begging, please let me live. Right? Meaning he's willing to be your slave if you don't kill him. right? So, meaning they're coming with a plea deal. Listen, you know, don't kill me. I'm willing to be your slave. But Malach Yisrael, Achav, didn't even accept that deal. Not only did he not kill him, but he didn't even accept him as a slave. What does he say? What does Achav say? Vayomer Achav, Achav says, Hagdenu Chai, Achihu. Is he still alive? Oh, we're best buddies. He's my brother. Yeah, bring him over. We're gonna give him a big hug and kiss. Right, we'll hang out in the fire pit. And that was a mistake. Right, the least he could have done is at least accept him as a slave. Right, he offered to be a slave. He didn't expect much more. All he wanted was him not to kill him. That was a major mistake. Pasuk Lamed Gimel continues. The Onashim Minachshu Veimaru Veyachatu Hamimenu Veyomeru Achicha Ben Adam Veyomer Bo Kacheu Veyete Ela Ben Adam Veyaleu Ela Markava. So it's a very interesting lesson over here. It says that the Onashim, the men of Ben Adad, Yenachshu Veimaru Veyachatu Hamimenu. So the Radak over here explains, what does this mean, Vayachatu Hamimenu? So he says, Mimenu is connected to the word Vayanachashu. Vayanachashu means kind of like to guess, to rely on all these signs, right? All these benign signs. Right, so they're saying, okay, so this is going to be a sign. The fact that he's saying that it's his brother, that's a sign that he's going to let him live. And they, what they did seize the opportunity. They, for their first offer was, he's going to be your slave. Right? But what does Achav say? Achav says, no, he's my brother. So right away, they seize the moment. They say, oh, he's your brother? Great. Right? Yes, Achicha Ben Adad, your brother Ben Adad. They hurry up to kind of to force Achav into that agreement, right? To
make a treaty.
Yeah, to what's the word? The word I'm looking for? To forgot the word. In any case, what they're trying to say is they're trying to take advantage of the words of Achav, and they're saying, "Oh, he's your brother. Okay,
let's shake hands and
let's shake on it. Meaning, let's solidify. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for. Let's solidify this covenant that you're not saying that he's your brother." Yeah, meaning they did it really quick, right? Right? They didn't wait a minute. They didn't wait a second. The second they heard he's your brother, immediately they solidified and said, okay, he's your brother, done deal, let's sign on the dotted line, let's make it happen. Right? Because they got very excited when they heard that they're brothers.
They made a treaty with him.
Yeah. He kind of grabbed the words out of his mouth. So Ben Adad comes over and he brings him onto his own carriage, which is obviously not something you do to your slave, definitely not your enemy. But he's making believe that they're best buddies, they're good friends. He's bringing him, yeah, come on, sit in, you know, you can sit in my coach. We have the, you know, you can sit in my box seats, right, in my special seat. Don't worry about it, we're all good. I'm good, you're good. We're all equals. Pasuk Lamed Daled. Vayomer Elav Ha'arim Shalakach Avi Meisavicha Oshiv. The cities that my father took from your father, I'll return. V'chutzayis Tosim L'cha B'damesek Kasher Sam Avi B'shoimrin V'ani v'bris ha-shalechecho v'yichras li-bris v'yishalchehu. So, now Achav even makes, he adds another mistake to this series of mistakes. He tells Ben-Hadad, all the cities my father took from your father, I'll give it back to you, it's all yours, right? And I'm not asking for anything in return. All I want is a peace treaty. I'm a peace-loving man. Just give me peace, and I'll give you whatever you want. Right? This is an unbelievable, foolish thing to do. Right? Achav is now coming from a position of strength. He just defeated Ben-Hadad. Right? He could ask him for anything he wants. He could become a slave. Ben-Hadad could become a slave. He could ask him for taxes. He can rule over his whole country. Whatever he wants. Right? But instead of seizing the moment and putting Ben-Hadad down, showing him his place, making him into a slave, or even killing him like the Navi told him, not only does he not do that, but he gives Ben-Hadad everything he could ever want. Right? It says, yeah, I'll give you all the cities, all I want is peace. Let's just sign a peace treaty, and you can have whatever you want. And that's what it says, V'rachmei Rishoyim Achzari. The mercy of evil people is really cruelness. Right? So Achav thinks, oh, I'm being so merciful, I'm being such a nice guy, so altruistic, so giving. But really what he's doing is he's being cruel. Being cruel to himself, to his own people. He has the opportunity of taking control of Ben-Hadad, and he doesn't do that. There's one more very important thing over here that we see in this pasuk. It says, "Chutzlois pasim lecha b'demesek, kasher sam avi b'shemrein." Right? You can now rule over the city of Damascus. That's what Rashi explains. Now, why does he mention Damascus? Out of all the cities, right? Out of all the cities that he captured, why does he mention Damascus more than anything?
It's the capital.
Yes.
I presume at the time.
So yeah, it's true, it's the capital. But even furthermore, we find that the Mesek actually has a very significant role in the coming of Mashiach. We find that David HaMelech managed he managed to fight his enemies. And he got almost all the way till Damascus, right? But he did not take over Damascus, right? He did not take over Damascus, and apparently Damascus is the city where the Malchus, the kingship that opposes the coming of Mashiach, that's where they stand. That's where they lie. They lie in Damascus. And that's why David HaMelech did not manage to take over the city of Damascus, because if he did, that would have brought what's called Tikkun HaGomer, that would have brought the complete Malchus of Hashem into this world, and basically this would have been built and never would have been destroyed. We find also very fascinating Medrash. The Medrash says that the Medrash talks about the right before Mashiach comes. There's an Oitzar Midrashim, he brings down. He talks about in length what's going to happen before Mashiach, and then he gives us a very specific sign. What's going to happen right before Mashiach comes? It says, V'zelecha ha'ois. And this is the sign you should keep your eyes peeled for. The sign is, K'sheyipol nirur ha'mizrachi shebedamesek. When the ruler of Damascus will fall, Oz titzmach ha'yeshua l'Yisrael, that's when the Yeshua, the redemption, will come to the Jewish people, and Mashiach will come, and will be able to go into Yerushalayim and build the Beis Hamikdash. That's the sign. When Nira Mizrahi in Damascus, the ruler of Mizrahi, he says that's the sign that the Malchus Bnei Mizrach, this kingship of the East, this Eastern kingship, which apparently opposes the coming of Mashiach, that's a sign that they fell, and that's when Mashiach can come. Sorry?
Any clue as to what that kingdom would be today?
Syria. When the king of Syria, Bashar Assad, I'm saying in Gematria also, Nir and Mizrahi comes out of Bashar Assad. It's the same Gematria.
But I believe it's many king of Syria fell for many years. No?
Many kings in Damascus fell, you're saying?
Of course, yes. For 1,000 years, probably. Not one.
Could be, I don't know. I don't know the history.
You assume it's the same king, 1,000 years?
Time the Hashmonoim, they were. You
know, no, I think king switch over, yeah. But the we're talking about a king falling, like literally his kingship fell.
It means what is falling? He fall, this kingdom fall on king.
Yeah, the king will fall when he's not king anymore.
It means fall. Literally.
No, not literally, like fall onto the ground. We're talking about like. When a ruler falls, it means that he doesn't have his position of power anymore. When he loses his position of power, that's a sign that when there's no more king in Damascus, when he loses his position of power,
if one king replaces another king, it's not fall.
No. But when there's no more king anymore, when he falls, then there's no more king. I think we can see that, you know, over the past couple of years, there's been a major war in Syria going on. The king did not fall yet, but when he does, that's a sign Mashiach is coming.
But it's only one sign. It's not enough.
Can't even figure out who's fighting who there.
Right, but the king is still king. Yeah. Saying the ruler, Bashar al-Assad, is still the ruler, still king. That much is clear. Once he falls, then we'll know Mashiach is coming. See, it's clear that it's very close, right? You can see, so to speak, the forces of Tumah and of, you know, the forces that are opposing Mashiach are fighting very hard to keep their stronghold. In the Six-Day War, when the Israeli army fought Syria, they got almost all the way till Damascus. And one of the Chassidus Rabbeim, I forgot who, he said that if they stopped right before they got to Damascus, they wouldn't have stopped. If they would have continued and taken over Damascus, he said Mashiach would have come. I forgot which Rebbe it was. But he said that. But the Medrash is very clear. The Medrash says clearly that when the ruler of Damascus will fall, that's a sign that Nafl Malchus Bnei Mizrach, that the kingship, this Eastern kingship will fell, and that's the kingship that opposes Mashiach, and then Mashiach will come. We're waiting for that to happen, hopefully very soon. But in any case, that's what Achav is giving over over here right now. That's why this line, Chutzitz Tosim L'cha B'Damasek, is so significant. Because he's literally giving up the stronghold of the city that opposes the coming of Mashiach. Okay, so far so good? Okay, let's see further. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. This is a very interesting story. It's kind of hard to understand, but let's do the best we can. So one of the Nevi'im comes over to another guy, Midvar Hashem, this is literally saying, Hashem told me to tell you, Hakeni na, Hashem told me to tell you that you should go ahead and hit me, strike me. What would you do if Anavi told you that? Would you hit him? If Anavi comes over to you and says, Richie, I want you to hit me. Go ahead, hit me. What would you do? Would you hit him? Yes or no?
Probably not. I don't know. I don't understand this whole thing. The Navi
comes to you and
says, hit me. Hashem told you to hit me.
What does he mean by that? Wake me up?
No, literally. Like, hit me. Bad. Take your hand and hit me.
Well, then you do it.
And you do
Navi tells you to do something, you do it. You got to listen.
Yeah, the Navi tells you to do something, you do it.
Well, if he knows what he's talking about.
No, we're talking about a real Navi. We're not talking about a Navi.
It wasn't a Navi. It says, Bibenea on the
Navi. Yeah, right. Yeah, it was
one of his disciples, one of his followers. Is he a Navi also?
Yes. Yeah, he was a Navi, yeah. He's coming with Dvar Hashem. He's coming with the word of Hashem. Right? He's not just like making stuff up. We're talking about a real Navi.
All right.
No, not a Navi Sheker. So he comes over to this person. He tells him, I want you to hit me. What does the person do? He refuses. He says, no, I'm not going to hit you. Well, what do you mean? You're a Navi. I'm not going to hit you. It's ridiculous. So what does the Navi tell him? Because you did not listen to the word of Hashem, when you leave me, this lion will attack you. And kill you. Sure enough, this person leaves him, and this lion attacks him and kills him.
Who did the lion attack? That's why I come. The Navi?
What?
Who did
the lion attacked the person that refused to hit the Navi.
All right.
Do you know who the person is?
No, it doesn't say who.
It doesn't
give
his name, it says Ish.
So Rashi here explains that it's kind of like a metaphor of some sort to show that just like Achav refused to kill the king of Aram, Ben-Hadad, refused to kill him, right, and he's going to be punished for that, so too this person that refused to hit the Navi is also going to be punished for not listening to Hashem. Kind of like a metaphor. It's kind of like a simon, some kind of sign, whatever that means. Again, it's something very hard to understand. We can't understand it fully, but we'll do the best we can.
The Navi told him to kill Ben-Hadad, and he didn't do it. So why is the Navi being punished? I don't know. That's what it sounds like.
No, it's not the Navi that's being punished. The Navi came over.
It's the one that was supposed to hit the Navi.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's the one being punished.
That doesn't. So he found somebody else, and he just hit me, and he hit the Navi.
Yeah.
I presume that's what happened. It's...
What do you mean, hit me? What does hit me mean?
Again, this is a metaphor for what Achav was supposed to do to Ben-Hadad. He was supposed to kill him.
I understand that. But what did he mean, hit me? How could I hit him over the head, hit him in the arm, hit him in the foot, shoot him with a bullet?
Give him a whack. Slap across the face or something.
Hit me? Or it could mean, I've done something wrong, please explain to me what I did wrong.
No, I mean, it sounds like I'm saying from the definitely the simple shot of the pasuk is, that he's supposed to actually hit him physically. Physically, take your hand, smack him over the face.
Twice, three times.
Once, I'm saying, it doesn't say
knock him out.
Yeah, I don't know if it says, you know, punch him or hit him or. Hit.
That's no, hitting me too.
No.
That's a hit. If you want to hit me, I hit you.
You know, we're not talking about like a little like slap on the wrist, you know.
Does it again?
How was he supposed? How was he supposed to know what he means by hit me? How strong should he hit me? I mean, it's got to be more than just hit me.
Right, but we're going to see the next person that he tells him, right? He actually hits him pretty hard, so hard that he actually starts bleeding.
He knocks out his teeth.
I don't know if it says, it doesn't say that he knocked out his teeth. But it says that he actually he hit him so much that he caused him to bleed. He's literally bleeding.
Do we know which Navi is it?
The Radak says that this Navi, the name of the Navi was Michiyahu. I don't really know who that is. He's not one of the Navim.
But this is a student of Navim.
Right. But again, he had the word of Hashem. He's not just, you know, he had Nevuah. Right? There were many, many Navim to the Jewish people. Right? There were many Navim. There were hundreds. Hundreds and hundreds of Navim. How many Navim are actually listed in the Tanakh? Right?
I don't remember.
How many? 47 Navim are actually listed. Why are only 47 listed? Why not all 100? You know, bring the whole laundry list of all the Navim. Because only the Nevuah, only the prophecy that actually lasted for generations, that's eternal, that actually impacts us all the way till today, is what's brought down. Right? Because the Torah is eternal. The Torah is not only this ancient text that applied, you know, thousands of years ago, and now it's kind of lost, and who really cares about it? The Torah applies to today's day and age, 2018, in Boston, Massachusetts, wherever you are, right? Applies till today. Torah is nitzchi; it's eternal, right? So only the parts of Torah that are brought that are actually eternal are brought down. Anything that's not eternal that doesn't apply to us nowadays is not brought down. So there's a lesson from everything to learn, right? Now this Navi is not brought down because I guess his Nevuah, I'm saying, this part of this story, I guess, is eternal. We will see later how it applies to us nowadays. But I'm saying the simple message is that when a Navi tells you something, even though it doesn't actually make any sense, you don't fully understand it, you're still supposed to listen. Right? Chazal say, even if the scholars tell you that your left is your right and your right is your left, right, you might say, what do you mean? This is my right hand, that's my left hand. What are you talking about? Right? You're going to tell me this is my left and this is my right? That's ridiculous. Right? But Chazal say, no, you should still listen to them. How you doing? You should still listen to them. Right? Why? Why should you listen to them? So one of the pshatim given is that you should listen to them because their perspective is different than our perspective. Right? When you look at me, right, this is my left time, my left side, and that's my right side, and this is my left side. Right? But a person is looking from the back, it's the opposite. Right? Depends what perspective, which direction you're looking from. The direction you're looking from changes based on your point of view. So when the Torah scholars or the Navi tells you that this is the right and that's the left, even though to you it seems like the opposite, but that's because you're looking from the wrong point of view. You're looking from the wrong perspective. That's why it seems wrong to you. if you had the perspective of the Torah scholar, of the prophet, then you would know that what he's telling you is right. So you have to acknowledge that the Torah scholar or the prophet is coming from a different point of view, from a different perspective, and that's why he sees things differently. That's why, even though it seems ridiculous, it seems ludicrous, you should still know that they have a better understanding, a deeper understanding, much better than you, and you have to listen to them no matter what.
What idea? You should agree or only accept his view?
What's the difference?
Well, I can say, okay, you're right and I'm right.
I mean, agree to disagree?
Yeah. But you both right. You have one angle, another angle.
No, it means that you have to accept their angle. Know that they...
My angle is still...
No, your angle doesn't have any validity. Right? Because... Again, it depends what, right? When it comes to studying Torah, right? If you ever walk into a Beis Medrash, if you walk into a study hall, right, in any yeshiva, right? What does it sound like? Does it sound like a nice, quiet library, everyone's sitting, studying, you know?
A guy would come in there and take a what's going on?
Yeah, it sounds like a huge noise, right? You look at them, everyone's like screaming and yelling at each other. What are you talking about? That's not what the Gemara says. Read the words. It's not true. What are you, right? Everyone's screaming and yelling at each other, right? That's, learning Torah is always a lot of back and forth, arguing. This is right. No, that's right. That's what this Talmud is all about, right? It's all back and forth between different stages. They're asking a question, proving him wrong, proving them wrong, answering back and forth. It's all back and forth. It's all arguments. Because that's how you get down to the truth, right? And also, if you're learning Torah from your Rebbe, and it doesn't make any sense to you, ask a question, right? It says, Loya Baishan Lomit. If you're too shy, you're too embarrassed to ask a question, you're never going to learn. Right? You have to have the guts. You have to have the gall to ask a question. The challenge, even if it's your Rebbe, right? Ask a question. Don't sit back and accept it, right? Right. That's how we develop learning, because through challenging each other, that's how you come to clarity. That's how you come down to the truth. But when it comes to, let's say, a psak, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to do X, right? Even though you think the right thing to do is Y, right? We're talking about practically what to do. Over there, you have to accept the authority, even though it doesn't make any sense to you. So it depends what. Okay, we'll stop here. It's time for Melchah.